Laura Kay, and it's time for another segment of Chat 360. This one's kind of serious, and we're talking about something that affects so many people, Alzheimer's disease. An irreversible progressive brain disorder, it affects nearly 7 million Americans. It slowly destroys memory and thinking skills, and eventually the ability to carry out simple tasks. Now, we don't know the specific causes of Alzheimer's. It's not fully known, but it is characterized by changes in the brain. And the changes can affect a person's ability to remember, to think, and to speak. What is really exciting about today's podcast is we're going to talk about, for the first time in 20 years, new medications that are available that not just manage the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, but address the underlying cause. And independent Health System is leading the way in the diagnosis and treatment, and they're offering hope to patients who are experiencing cognitive impairment, and they are the first in the region to provide these new therapies. How exciting is that? So today, my very special guest in the studio, taking time out of her busy schedule, is Dr. Mary Elizabeth Kovacic-Eicher, and she is the Director of Neurosciences at Independence Health System. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I know I'm going to leave most of this podcast to you. You are the professional. You have this down. I heard you speak at a recent conference at IHS, and you know what you're talking about. So tell me about this renewed hope and tell me why it's so important that we talk about it in Westmoreland County.
Sure. So I think what surprises many is how many people actually suffer from Alzheimer's disease. By the time we are 45, the risk in women is 1 in 5, and the risk to develop Alzheimer's in men is 1 in 10. So it really does affect so, so many, and about 300,000 Pennsylvanians alone. And so it is something that we are excited to talk about because it has renewed this level of hope in how we manage and how we address the disease with our patients. So this is not a cure, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But what our hope is that as we develop more and more medications to treat underlying causes of Alzheimer's disease, that it will continue to promote research, advancements in medicine, and that someday, and hopefully soon, there will be a cure for our patients. And that's something that I've obviously, as a neurologist, never been able to offer them. Mm-hmm. And to be able to show them and introduce them to the fact that people haven't forgotten about them, that Alzheimer's is not only something that affects our patients and their families, but our entire communities. And I think that allows patients, again, to have that renewed level of hope that they are not forgotten.
Can I ask you, go back to something you said that was very interesting to me. The risk factors for men versus women. Why is it higher for women?
So I don't know that that's fully understood. What we do know is when we talk about Alzheimer's disease and how we promote health is similar across the specialties. So it really involves living a healthy lifestyle. It involves making good decisions about what we're putting into our bodies, about how we're spending our days, exercise. You know, it all comes down to that sometimes.
I knew it
would.
So
much. I know.
And I'm not a big exerciser.
Me either. And
you
I
aren't?
Need to be.
Oh, goodness.
I know. And I tell my patients that all the time. You know, I would never ask them to do something I can't do. So when I say exercise, I'm not telling them to go out and run miles every day. I'm saying walk. Walk with your families, walk with your loved ones, walk with your friends, walk with your animals. Get outside, get some vitamin D. Try to put good things and healthy things into your body. But of course, we're all going to have some chocolate once in a while, and that's going to be okay.
We have to.
That's right. I definitely do. And so much of what we do, you know, really comes down to making good decisions about how we treat our bodies. And one of the things I love to tell my patients, it may seem silly, but doing homework every day, doing 20 minutes of something that will sort of stimulate the brain, word puzzles. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to always laugh when my brother and my mom would go at it with words with friends, and they'd be on their phones trying to beat each other at that Scrabble game. But that is great for the brain. We have to stimulate the brain in ways all the time. And we might not be doing that at work where we're doing something the same way that we do
it
every day.
Perhaps, yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we need to still stimulate ourselves. And that's a really kind of fun way to do it. And so any kind of word jumbles and things, go to Barnes & Noble or somewhere local newsstand and pick up, you know, a crossword puzzle book, a word search book, anything like that to stimulate how we think about words and how we put words together can be extremely helpful.
I'm thinking back in the past, probably not that long ago, Alzheimer's was very hard to diagnose. Probably most people would think, oh, I'm just getting older. This is what happens when you get older. So was it diagnosed in the past at all? Or what was the first time that someone stopped and said, wait, this is not a normal process of aging?
Sure. So I think we've known about Alzheimer's for a long time, but it was one of those sort of diagnoses that were put together by a battery of tests. You would try to figure out if there was anything else causing someone's memory loss. Was it a vitamin deficiency? Was it a history of infection that may have affected the brain in some way? Was there a history of stroke? Mm-hmm. What was going on that we could maybe see or hear about from the patient's past or visualize on one of the scans that we do, right? CT or MRI scans. Could we visualize that damage had been done to the brain in some way that led to them being more confused? But in the sense of Alzheimer's disease, you can't see that on a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of it was, okay, you eliminate all other possibilities and the patient is still struggling in their mind. They're still struggling with words. They're still struggling with perception.
And speech, probably.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Speech, daily tasks, what could be causing it. And you put together that with how they scored on memory tests and which parts of their memory were affected. And then you also could do something called a neuropsych evaluation, which is actually someone going and doing hours of memory tests to, again, look at which parts of the brain might be affected. Is it the part that affects the way we see the world? Is it mm-hmm. the part that affects how we are faced with a problem and then determine how to step by step address that problem? Which parts of the memory are affected? And you kind of put the whole picture together, and that's how we came up with a diagnosis. With regard to an official diagnosis, to be 100% positive, that could not happen until after death. It would have to be during autopsy that we were able to go in and find evidence of Alzheimer's disease.
And what help was that?
So, exactly.
I mean, after the fact.
Exactly. And that was a struggle too, because then we didn't know if it was running in families or not. So when you have Alzheimer's disease, a certain part of that can run in families and be genetic. And so we want to be prepared and be able to help prepare families if that's something they may have to face. And so the more we learn about it and the more we're able to diagnose it properly and effectively, then we can do those things and help families prepare. And so over the past years, we have come to have abilities to actually do certain tests mm-hmm. that will identify underlying processes like amyloid, a protein that we think is at least partially responsible for Alzheimer's. We can identify that through testing now to confirm that someone does indeed have Alzheimer's disease. And they're still here with us, so we can do something about it.
And this is really the reason why I have you on today, is because you are talking about something that indeed you are doing about helping people, not curing Alzheimer's, but helping people maintain their lifestyle, their personality, their family connections, their memories for longer than they normally would. I want you to talk a little bit about this program. What does this program entail?
Sure. So it involves someone having the concern, whether that be brought forward by their primary care doctor in the form of a referral to our office, or a patient calling in themselves. They can self-refer. Or a patient's family member calling in and saying, we need help. That's okay. We will find a spot for you. We have ensured that there will be quick access for these patients. They have to go through sort of a battery of information. So we'll sit there with them and we try to get to know them really as a person, try to get to know them, their family, or their loved one that they brought with them, because often that person has sort of an outside perspective on what may have been happening mm-hmm. over the past months or years. And that can be really beneficial to coming up with a diagnosis. So the very first thing we do is spend time with you. Get to know you as a person, because knowing you as a person is the most important thing, I truly believe, in how we care for our patients. Not every single patient is the same. And so there's no overarching way to say, this is what I'm doing for everyone. It has to be about you as an individual and what is important to you and your family. And my job is to help you understand what is happening so that you can take power back over it and really be able to be yourself.
I love that.
And so thank you. So I think that's what we stand by in our clinic in general. You know, when I talk to my staff, it's really about how can we help a person stay themselves for as long as we possibly can and have that power back in their life. And so for this, they come in, we spend time with them, we get to know them, and then we will do some of those things I mentioned, some imaging studies perhaps. Sometimes we do a sticker study. It's called an EEG, where we put stickers on their head and we can actually look at how the electricity works in the brain. We'll do blood work to make sure that it's not a simple vitamin deficiency that's causing the problem. There's also genetic testing you can do, and that's been around maybe a little bit longer, where you can look for certain genes that have been connected to Alzheimer's, and people can opt to have that as well. Sometimes that's harder with insurances, but we do our best to try to fight for that to get it covered for people. So that's an option too. So we go through sort of an in-depth workup that takes a few weeks to maybe a few months. It depends on how quickly we can get that testing done and how quickly the patient is able to do that. And then if there is still a concern at that point for Alzheimer's, because again, many things can cause dementia, or a change in memory or ability or personality or ability to perform tasks. Many things can cause that. But in 60 to 70% of cases, it is in fact Alzheimer's disease, and we just don't realize it. And so if we're still concerned about that after putting the whole picture together, then we send the patient for those confirmatory tests. So we will have them either do a specialized scan, it's called a PET scan, kind of looks like a CT scanner or an MRI scanner. Patients will receive an injection of a tracer that goes in and it looks for amyloid. And then we're able to see that. And if there is an increased amount of amyloid, then the diagnosis of Alzheimer's can be given. There's also the option of a lumbar puncture or a spinal tap that can be done. And we take some of the fluid from there and we're able to test that for both amyloid and tau, another protein that we talk about in Alzheimer's disease.
And you've said the word amyloid a couple times, and I want you to go back, please, and give us a definition of that so that we understand what you mean.
Sure. So amyloid is simply a type of protein that can build up in various parts of the body. And in this case, amyloid beta is the one that is specific to what we see building up in the brain. And then that can actually form sort of deposits.
Okay.
And it links with other types of bad proteins, one of those called tau, and it forms what we call little tangles in the brain. And we have seen that when you have more of that, we see worsening of Alzheimer's disease.
Now, I think when we think of Alzheimer's, we probably, and I probably am guilty of this, put it under an umbrella that everybody experiences it the same. It's the same symptoms. I'm sure that's not true. You see a lot of different people that have this issue, and I'm sure a varying degree of the way things are happening, what is lost, what skills are lost. So it's very individual, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And that's what I tell a lot of people too in any of the diseases we treat as neurologists. No one experiences Alzheimer's the same. No one experiences Parkinson's the same. Mm-hmm. No one experiences multiple sclerosis the same. It is different because you are an individual. So your experience with that disease will be your own. And there's no way for us to know what that's going to look like. And that's why I tell patients, please don't go home and Google this, because the numbers or the picture that is presented can sometimes appear quite devastating. Mm-hmm. And I'm not denying that in some cases that will be the case, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But in so many cases, what we have is that patients determine their own route through the disease. They determine their own trajectory. And that depends so much on the life they have led up to that point and what that disease will then look like as it manifests in them. So there's no way to predict how long or how quickly something like Alzheimer's will advance in a patient. We will only know by forming a long-lasting, supportive relationship with that patient, having them come back every few months and retesting their memory, seeing what they're struggling with at home, talking to them. Again, it's about spending time with our patients, knowing what they're going through at home. And so much of what we do is not just handing people a medicine. It's really about being a supportive network for them and giving them opportunities to join support groups, to talk to social workers, to find avenues of gaining support out there in our communities, because they're there, but it's hard to know how to access them. And so much of what we do too, this drug in particular, these new drugs that are out, are for patients that are in the beginning of the disease. That is where it seems to be effective. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been tested as we move later into the disease stages. So right now, if a patient is early enough, then we are able to offer them this medicine if they so choose to take it. And again, it's not a push. This is where we are in science currently. Mm-hmm. This is what we have to offer. These are the risks versus the benefits, and then the patient and their team make the decision that is best for them. And it won't be the same for everyone.
And I did get a chance to meet some of the patients that you're currently working with at the press conference, and they were very emotional about the effect that your treatment has had on their life. But very different individuals, different ages, different backgrounds, and it was very empowering, and I'm going to use your word, to see that you're making a difference in their lives, for husbands, for wives, for mothers. I mean, this is a devastating disease that I think you mentioned this, but it kills more than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined.
It's true.
I did not know that.
I didn't know it either until I really started studying this throughout my training. And when you hear that kind of number and that kind of fact, it is so overwhelming to me that so many suffer from it and so many families suffer from it, because this is just not a disease for the patient. This is a disease that everyone in their family and in their support group, their circle of friends, will experience right along with them. Mm-hmm. And it is scary. And in any way that I can talk to my patients about it and tell them what is out there, to help them make the decision that is right for them, that's sort of my goal in medicine, right? It's to say, this is an opportunity. Whether it's right for you or not, I don't know. We're going to sit here and figure it out together, because I can't imagine, but the worst thing has to be if you're a patient and you're feeling alone.
Right.
You need to be supported. And not all of our patients have strong support network. And that means we step up. We step up as a clinic family, and we're there to support them.
Well, and even though there are 7 million Americans living with Alzheimer's, when you have it yourself, it seems extremely personal, and you almost feel like you're the only one suffering from it.
I would agree with that. Unfortunately, with Alzheimer's, and I think one of the scariest things is, in many of our patients, they don't know it's happening. Mm-hmm. The people around them can see the change, but they themselves cannot. So sometimes there's not that knowledge that something bad is happening until it's too late. And so that's why we encourage people to come see us early.
Be proactive.
Absolutely. If you're noticing something off with a loved one, have us check them. That's better. And then hearing that it's not Alzheimer's, great. Then how do we approach it otherwise? And we'll be with you to help you figure that out. But if we ignore it, it may be too late for us to do anything.
You have two drugs, and of course, with every therapy, there are risks and benefits, but we all know that there's not going to be any benefit by leaving Alzheimer's alone to do its work. So we are going to talk about at the end here how to get evaluated, how to call in, the number that you can use to call in to be evaluated by IHS. But I wanted to bring up the local connection, because Dr. Kovacic-Eicher, you are local. Where are you from?
I am. I'm from Blairsville, Pennsylvania, so I grew up there my entire life.
And that's really cool. So you went to Blairsville High School, all right, and what made you want to be a neurologist?
For me, it was about developing those long-lasting relationships with my patients. So when I was growing up, I always knew I wanted to bring back subspecialty medicine to our area to prevent people from having to travel to get the care that they need and the care that they deserve. So I knew I wanted to do medicine. And my mom was a nurse growing up, so she really inspired me as well. And my parents both inspired me to live a life of service. He said, if you're going to feel fulfilled in your life, you have to give back to the community of which you are a part. And so when I was in medical school, I actually went in thinking I was going to be an emergency medicine doctor. But I would only spend a few minutes at a time with these patients. And the next day, I would want to know what happened. Mm-hmm. So I'd be calling them to check on them. I'd be running upstairs into the hospital to check on them and tracking them down and wanting to keep in touch. And so long-term relationship was important to me because, again, I want patients to feel supported. I don't want them to feel alone. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I can't imagine what it's like to be them, and I would never pretend to do so. And I can't imagine what it's like to have certain diseases that I have to diagnose every day. But it's that idea of trying to be there for them and letting them know that they always have somewhere to turn. And that's what's important to me. So when I was studying, I realized in neurology, so much was unknown. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want people to feel hopeless. I wanted them to have hope. And to have that opportunity to instill that in my patients every day is just such a blessing.
Well, I really appreciate you being here with me today. And if you, my listener, are a patient or a family member of someone who wants to be evaluated by Independence Health System Neurology, you can contact the system's memory clinics in Greensburg. And I'm going to give you the number. It is 724-261-5619. That is 261-5619. You can also, if you're in Butler, there's a separate number, 724-431-1613. That is 431-1613. And get in touch with Dr. Kovacic Iker and her team at IHS. There is now hope for people with Alzheimer's. And I thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here today.
Thank you so much for having me.